double standard regarding abuse, a harbinger of Leo XIV's pontificate. This week's story looks at how the clergy sexual abuse crisis evolves in the early months of the new pontificate. The Pope decided to be rather transparent when dealing with Jean-Paul Guichen's resignation. He used to be the Bishop of Verdun, France. Transparency, even if it happened with him, is so far an isolated occurrence. One only needs to compare what happened with Guichen with the ongoing situation with Bishop Ciro Quispe López, the now former Bishop of Juli, Peru, who resigned 3 days before Guichen. So, is France the new model of accountability for the church? Well, it is hard to say. France is up until now a global reference when dealing with how to solve, how to address the abuse crisis because of the combination of some features that are absent in many other countries. On the one hand, you have the pressure from a rather organized civil society. They have been able to prove their ability to organize survivors and their allies and to build broad coalitions and to demand reform as occurred in the United States in the 1990s and after that. This pressure has shaped a will in the political system to promote legal and political reforms in France. There is also a media very willing to report, again, as it happened back in the 1990s in the United States. There is a willingness from the Catholic media and civil media too to acknowledge the scale of the crisis and to offer space to the voices of the victims. Also, survivors such as Jean-Marie Delvaux, a former student at the Catholic School of Bethlehem, published recently a book about his own experience there. There is also the issue of how the lower or low clergy are challenging the bishops, the monsignors, the cardinals. The crisis has forced the so-called low or lower clergy to confront the normalization of abuse in the Catholic Church. The normalization can be seen as an example in the way many resignations of bishops and priests go without notice, since the Church is unwilling to report the real reasons behind such resignations, but also in the way the Church is stricter when dealing with the sexual abuse of male minors when compared to adult females. A key player in challenging the normalization of abuse in France has been Sister Véronique Margron, who has been the chair of the Conference of Religious Males and Females of France for several years now. Margron publicly criticizes the handling of the crisis as an unforgivable conspiracy of silence. Her analysis acknowledges, in a sense, the evidence provided by the Sauvaire report while integrating ideas from philosophers such as Karl Jaspers. Citing Jaspers, Margron recognizes that the solutions to problems such as the crisis of sexual abuse involves a purification and transformation of our being, which cannot be limited to liturgical actions that, given their recurrence of the phenomenon, end up being seen as cosmetic actions, as performances that can achieve something at the moment, while the liturgy is happening, but are actually unable to address the structural reasons of clergy sexual abuse. In the story, you can find links to Sister Margron's Facebook page, where you can read her takes regarding this issue. Margron's criticism is crucial because it comes from a position of female ecclesiastical leadership. Unfortunately, and that is one of the main differences when thinking about other countries, it is impossible to imagine the nuns in Mexico or Chile or Peru, anywhere in Latin America, taking similar stance on the issue of clergy sexual abuse. A crucial feature of the crisis in France, more evident after what happened at the Catholic school in Beveram, is the way in which the crisis has been politicized. In a sense, this politicization of the crisis facilitated the fall of the now former Prime Minister François Bayrou due to his mismanagement of the scandal at that school, where one of his children studied, his wife taught, and some of the then professors there were willing to inform him when he held key positions in the French national government about what was happening there at Beveram. Bayrou's inaction and even willingness to openly lie during an appearance in the French Congress made a politicization of the issue almost unavoidable. Closely related to this issue is the fact that there is a double standard in how the church deals with the information about clergy sexual abuse. For the most part, it is dominated by opacity, by the unwillingness to come forward to actually inform what is really happening. To explain the problem, the story goes over how at the end of September, two bishops resigned their positions, one from Peru and the other from France, separated by only 72 hours, 3 days. The differences in how Rome has been handling these two resignations reveal how selective is Rome when informing about resignations somehow related to the clergy sexual abuse crisis. With Ciro Quispe López, the Bishop of Juli, Peru, who resigned on the 24th of September of this year, 24 years before his retirement age, Rome followed the silent exit model. In previous installments of this series, his case has been considered in greater detail. If you are interested in knowing more about him, I suggest using the search engine with the bishop's name, and you will find the stories we have been doing about him in both English and Spanish. 3 days later, 3 days after Ciro Quispe López's resignation, on the 27th of September, Bishop Jean-Paul Guichin resigned his position. In his case, at that moment, the exact same model was followed. There was no information about why he resigned only the idea, now hardly credible, of some health issue associated with the resignation. However, just over a month after, the Apostolic Nunciature, the embassy of the Vatican in France, issued an unusual statement that broke the protocol of silence. The reasons for the resignations are detailed there. You can find a translation of the full statement in the piece, providing the details. It confirms the opening of a canonical probe and a report to the civil authority. It explicitly states restrictions set on Gushing by the Holy See, seclusion, abstaining from presiding public services, among others. These are all symbolic measures, nothing really meaningful, but it is the first time that this type of measures is known a few weeks after the resignation of a bishop. Furthermore, the statement from the nunciature shows that it was not just about a relationship with a woman, as the bishop himself admitted over an interview with the French media. The nunciature is speaking about women, about females in the plural. So by acting as he did, Gushing contradicted, among other things, his idea that pastoral work should focus on the practice of honesty. In the piece, there is a video from French media where he goes over this idea of how he understands the role of a bishop, connecting his pastoral duties with the practice of honesty and fraternity and other values, no? So this ultimately just magnified the scope of the problem. And the contrast is sharpened not only when considering the very case of Bishop Gushing, why we have to wait for a month to know more details about what was happening there, but also when thinking about Quispe López, the Peruvian bishop, and even more when looking at the recent history of other bishops' resignations in France. There is Cardinal Michel Lopetit, the now emeritus Archbishop of Paris, and there is Bishop Michel Santier, now emeritus bishop of Créteil, who resigned without the nunciature ever disclosing the real reasons for their resignations. So the transparency in the Gushing's case is an exception to the norm. It is something that should be common, but the fact is that it is not. The explicit restrictions set on Gushing are reminiscent of those that were revealed after a similar scandal to have been imposed on the Peruvian cardinal, emeritus archbishop of Lima and member of the Opus Dei, Juan Luis Cipriani. Cipriani challenged Pope Francis in life when he decided to return to Lima to receive an award given to him by Rafael López Aliaga, his fellow Opus Dei member and the current mayor of Lima. Cipriani also did it when he decided to go to Rome during the Argentine Pope's funeral, no, despite the restrictions that existed already then. So that raises a direct question. Will the transparency shown in the Gushing case in France translate into something resembling a rule, a policy under Leo XIV? Well, it will be useful if that were the case, but it is actually hard to imagine that happening at this point. ¶¶ The story ends with notes on the effects of inertia as an existential risk for the Catholic Church worldwide. In one sense, the Gushing case must be seen in light of Leo XIV's own record. As prefect of the Dicastery for Bishops in 2024, Robert Prevost exonerated Cardinal John Dew. He was at the time the Archbishop of Wellington, New Zealand. He's a cardinal, so now he's the Emeritus Archbishop of Wellington. He was accused a few years ago of mishandling reports of abuse in his diocese, and there was some credibility to the accusations, and I'm able to say that because Pope Francis himself immediately accepted Dew's resignation at age 75. Had there been some doubts about what was happening there, I'm pretty sure Francis would have kept him at Wellington. No, but he did not. Pope Francis himself decided to accept immediately the resignation and to appoint a successor there in Wellington. No? So that is why survivors groups in New Zealand criticize the way Prevost ruled on this issue later when he was probing this issue. And instead of prioritizing the care of the victims, he preferred to pay attention to the institutional interest of the Catholic Church down there in New Zealand. Finally, a couple of news items related to Mexico reveal the problems that the Catholic hierarchy here has in diagnosing the effects of its own performance, both on the issue of abuse and on other issues that end up further eroding its credibility. In one sense, the Mexican bishop celebrated the appointment of Daniel Portillo, a priest of the Archdiocese of Chihuahua, as director of SEPROMELAT. SEPROMELAT is the corresponding body of Tutela Minorum for Latin America. No? So, in theory, it is an entity devoted to prevent clergy sexual abuse in Latin America. The problem, the reason why it's so hard, really very hard to understand why Portillo was appointed and why the Mexican bishops are elated about his appointment, is that Portillo is a priest from a diocese, Chihuahua, that has not been able or willing or a combination of both to comply with the most basic of Pope Francis' requests regarding the abuse crisis, to create an abuse prevention commission in every diocese. No? And Chihuahua is an archdiocese. There is no excuse there to not having a commission, more so because, as we have proved here at Los Angeles Press, where Chihuahua sadly has a history of clergy sexual abuse, a very sad history of clergy sexual abuse. And in appointing Portillo to this continental position, well, it seems to indicate that there is no actual interest in addressing what this diocese is not doing as far as complying with these rules set by Pope Francis going back to 2019. No, so it's not as if it was something very recent. It's almost 6 years now since Pope Francis made this request, and some dioceses are simply unwilling to do it. In other sense, the same bishops, the Mexican bishops, have barely begun a weak criticism of a bill with which the ruling party in Mexico seeks more power to decide what can be said and what cannot be said in Mexican social media. Far from making a defense based on respect for freedom of speech as a fundamental, as a human right, the president of the Mexican bishops asked Catholics to mobilize to show political muscle. The worst thing is that just when this defense began, one of the bishop's favorites here in Mexico, the so-called Father Handguns or Padre Pistolas, a priest who loves to display himself on social media using weapons and insulting without the slightest modesty, acted out insulting the governor of a state in Mexico, Mrs. Livia Garcia, the governor of the state of Guanajuato. So on top of that, far from expressing an explicit condemnation of Padre Pistolas, these dudes blazing guns over social media, the bishops published a cryptic message that only them and a handful of Mexicans will be able to understand. They had a chance to come forward, to be honest about disavowing this priest, who I don't think is able to actually convey the message of the gospel. And instead of doing that, they decided to say something that only them can understand, and that is a weak condemnation of what should be clearly condemned and was not, sadly. Well, thank you very much for reading us. If you have any comments, if you have something you want to tell us, you know where you can find us. You can find me at RSNUNEZ at either Twitter, Blue Sky, or Facebook. I'm pretty much always there, so you can get in touch if you want to share something with us. Take care, and thank you very much for reading and now for hearing us.